The Enduring Church of God presents Charles E. Bryce, bringing you a straightforward message on the abundant life and the good news of the kingdom of God.
Hello, everyone. Today we're going to continue with our series about the Roman Empire, its rise and fall, and compare that to the rise and now decline of the Western world, and in particular, America and Britain. Are there lessons to be learned from the collapse of the mighty Roman Empire? Will we learn those lessons before it is too late and history repeats itself? Only this time it won't be Rome that falls. It will be the Western powers that collapse if we don't heed the warning and reverse the disastrous course we are now following. Once again, we're going to read extensively from the booklet entitled The Modern Romans, The Decline of Western Civilization. This little booklet was published by the Worldwide Church of God starting in 1971 when Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong was alive and leading the church. We will start reading on page 44 and continue through page 55. The heading of this chapter is A Mad Craze for Pleasure. It says, "We live in a society where anything goes. The consequences are manifested in a society of escapists, gripped in history's greatest pleasure binge, in excessive cravings for luxury and ease, in materialistic lust and money worship. Anything goes, quote unquote, shows itself in entertainment obsessed with sexploitation, violence, and the depths of human perversion. It is found in a drug-inundated culture that is ill at ease outside a continual state of drug-induced euphoria or kicks. Not everyone is that way in our society today, but a huge segment of the population is, and unfortunately, that segment is getting bigger and bigger with each passing day. We have our anything-to-make-a-buck business ethic, our new morality, quote-unquote, or rather immorality, our loose-living subculture, our white-collar thief, and the shoplifting housewife and others that practice that crime. We see the anything-goes philosophy and the furtive support of a multi-billion-dollar organized vice and pornography industry in the topless and bottomless nightclubs and restaurants in the subtle message that preaches, quote, crime pays, just don't get caught. Isn't that true? Let's be honest. Let's be frank. Let's face reality. This aptly describes the Western world today and aptly describes a vast segment of the population and the cultures of Britain and America right now at this very moment. Continuing, our commercial society shouts and screams its materialistic goals and values at every corner, on our billboards, with nearly every flip of a magazine page, with many a television broadcast, and, of course, all over the internet. The tempting message says, live this way, live a little more, it's the end thing. Don't worry. Everybody does it. Or, as Madison Avenue says, happiness is. Or, as Wall Street says, profit is everything. What is happiness supposed to be? Happiness is, quote unquote, continues the unrelenting bombardment. Buying our car, purchasing this style of clothing, eating this food, drinking this beer, seeing this movie, taking this trip, indulging in this sporting activity, or it is joining our gang, popping this pill, freaking out, pot, speed, illicit sex, cocaine, the pill, and so on. As if this were life's ultimate achievement. Indulge yourself. You owe it to yourself. Buy now and pay later. Live it up now, goes the swan song of an indulgent society, and millions ignorantly throw caution to the wind. In an age of selfish materialism, few seriously question whether all this rapid consumption of indulgences is really good for them or where it will all lead. Only the strong can resist the temptation to immediately overindulge themselves. Only the wise with a strong sense of values can see through the superficiality, the sham and the deceit and emptiness of much of it. Only those with an eye on the lessons of history understand the subtle dangers of careless, excessive self-indulgence, self-seeking, and hedonism. While the nation faces the greatest problems in its history, and we are facing some of the greatest problems throughout our entire history, Anybody who's watching the news and who's honest with the facts will have to agree with that. While the nation faces the greatest problems in its history, demanding the greatest effort and sacrifice, all these things are going on, having to do with self-fulfillment. However, millions would rather play, escape, and indulge themselves in temporary selfish goals. What does history teach us about such trends? Again, let Rome tell her story. As mentioned earlier, with the conquering of many nations, wealth, trade, and fortunes were to be made. But with wealth came a crucial problem. A Roman historian explains, quote, "The Pax Romana brought many blessings. It made possible the greatest luxury, the most active commercial life the world ever saw. Though a few savage tribes might ravage the frontiers, the quiet interior provinces were destined to perpetual peace and prosperity," so the Roman citizens thought. And so in this dream of the absolute fixity of the Roman system, men went on getting, studying, enjoying, dissipating, doing everything except to prepare for fighting until Alaric sacked the Eternal City. And so the barbarians at length destroyed a society that was more slowly destroying itself. So wrote William Stearns Davis in his outstanding book, The Influence of Wealth in Imperial Rome. What were the Romans' highest social values and goals? He goes on to write this: "The excessive desire for wealth without regard to methods or to duty toward posterity, the downright sensuality, were accomplishing their perfect work. The economic evil was at the bottom. First Italy, then a vast empire, devoted itself for centuries to a feverish effort for getting money by any means and to spending that money on selfish enjoyments." Does this all sound familiar? Other things went for little. Their fall was great, while the lesson of their fall lies patent to the 20th and 21st century. Continuing to read from this booklet, The Modern Romans. The noted Roman historian Edward Gibbon commented on the pleasure-crazed ruin of the Roman character in his famous treatise, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. He wrote, quote, "From the morning to the evening, careless of the sun or of the rain, the spectators, who sometimes amounted to the number of 400,000. Did you know the giant Circus Maximus in Rome seated this many? 400,000 remained in eager attention, their eyes fixed on the horses and charioteers, their minds agitated with hope and fear for the success of the colors which they espoused, and the happiness of Rome appeared to hang on the event of a race." You find that in Edward Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Volume 2. Games lasting one day soon became games lasting 7, 9, or 15 days. But the Roman people could never have too much. Let's consider this. They were not much different from the crowds who sleep overnight in front of the ticket offices waiting to buy World Series or Super Bowl tickets in the United States or to attend a rock music concert today in America and in Britain. Few people realize just how closely contemporary American and British life parallels that of Imperial Rome before its collapse. The gripping book entitled Those About to Die by Daniel P. Mannix portrays startling conditions about Roman life. Notice the interplay between Mannix's observations of ancient Roman life and conditions today. He writes, "In a sense, the people were trapped. Rome had overextended itself. She had become, as much by accident as design, the dominant nation of the world. The cost of maintaining the Pax Romana, which means the peace of Rome, over most of the known world was proving too great even for the enormous resources of the mighty empire. The cost of its gigantic military program was only one of Rome's headaches. To encourage industry in her various satellite nations, Rome attempted the policy of unrestricted trade." Does this sound familiar? Aren't we seeing all of this played out right before our very eyes in our beloved countries of America and Britain and the rest of the Western world today? Yes, it is being played out right before our very eyes if we have the honesty to face facts. Rome attempted a policy of unrestricted trade, but the Roman working man was unable to compete with the cheap foreign labor and demanded high tariffs. The government was finally forced to subsidize the Roman working class to make up the difference between their real wages, the actual value of what they were producing, and the wages required to keep up their relatively high standard of living. Just as in America and Britain today, spiraling wage increases are pricing American goods right out of the world market, and lower cost imports are threatening our own domestic market. Continuing to write about the Roman Empire, similar to the mighty superpower of the United States of America, Mr. Mannix writes this: as a result, thousands of workmen lived on this subsidy and did nothing whatever, sacrificing their standard of living for a life of ease. Today we find America and Britain increasingly becoming welfare states. This is taxing our resources and setting in motion unhealthy attitudes toward work and productivity. Continuing to quote from the book, Those About to Die by Daniel P. Mannix, quote, attempts were made to abolish slave labor in the factories, but the free workmen's demand for short hours and high wages had grown so great that only slaves could be used economically, end quote. What effect did all this have on the average Roman citizen? Mannix continues, with the economic and military position of the empire too hopelessly complicated for the crowd to comprehend, they turned more and more toward the only thing that they could understand, the arena. The name of a great general or of a brilliant statesman meant no more to the Roman mob than the name of a great scientist does to us today. But the average Roman could tell you every detail of the last games, just as today the average man can tell you all about the latest football or baseball standings, but has only the foggiest idea what NATO is doing or what steps are being taken to fight inflation or what steps are being taken in the economic situation we find ourselves in today. Life simply became too complex for the average Roman. But the continuous staging of games and spectacles, cleverly promoted by the Caesars to keep the people's minds occupied, was something to which he could relate. The Caesars, said one historian, exhausted their ingenuity to provide the public with more festivals than any people, in any country, at any time, has ever seen. Until our time, that is. Continuing to read from this booklet, The Modern Romans. Rome endowed its professional sports heroes with great glory. Once again, an exact parallel to what we do today in our country. Listen to what historian Carcopino wrote in his book, Daily Life in Ancient Rome. Quote, the charioteers knew glory too and more. Though they were of low-born origin, mainly slaves emancipated only after recurrent success, they were lifted out of their humble estates by the fame they acquired and the fortunes they rapidly amassed from the gifts of magistrates and emperors and the exorbitant salaries they extracted as the price of remaining with the colors. Isn't that what's happening today in our society and in the Western world, and especially in America? Professional athletes today are demanding and receiving whopping salaries. Some football and basketball superstars and baseball superstars frequently negotiate multi-year contracts for multiple millions of dollars. You hear it on the news all the time. Well, the same thing was happening in Rome, the mighty Roman Empire of old. Highly touted but unproved rookies straight out of college and now increasingly straight out of high school are virtually financially set up for life. Some of them are paid many times over the salary of their former teachers and professors who have doctor's degrees. And for what? For playing games that people pay big money to watch. And there is the matter of gambling on sporting activities. Affluent Rome thrived on it. This author went on to say, quote, but the passionate devotion which they, the charioteers, inspired in a whole people were fed also from more tainted sources. It was related to the passion for gambling. The victory of one chariot enriched some and impoverished others. The hope of winning unearned money held the Roman crowd all the more tyrannically in its grip in that the larger proportion was unemployed. The rich would stake a fortune, the poor the last penny. End quote. Gambling is a major and traditional ingredient of modern Britain's way of life and of the way of life in the United States of America today. No one knows for certain, but it may even be Britain's number one industry. Surely it is her number one pastime. Ever since Parliament passed the Betting and Gaming Act in 1960, establishing betting shops and permitting gaming for charity and other purposes, the gaming industry has taken off like a rocket. In Britain, the turnover of the gambling industry amounts to billions of dollars. And in America, the gambling industry also amounts to multi-billions of dollars, with casinos in many major cities and in many major outlying areas just outside of city limits throughout the United States of America. But there are other trends which manifest the growing craze for unrestrained pleasures and thrills. Just like the Romans, watching the gory spectacles in the arenas, our young people are, quote, learning nothing but contempt for human life and dignity. That's a quote from the author Carcopino. And of course, violence reigns supreme in so many of the productions of, quote unquote, entertainment today, movies, television shows, and rock concerts. It was much the same way in Rome before that great empire was swept into oblivion. The author Myers, in his book Rome, Its Rise and Fall, writes this, quote, almost from the beginning, the Roman stage was gross and immoral. It was one of the main agencies to which must be attributed the undermining of the original, sound, moral life of Roman society. And that's a big lesson for us to consider today. Let me repeat that. Almost from the beginning, the Roman stage was gross and immoral. It was one of the main agencies to which must be attributed the undermining of the originally sound moral life of Roman society. So absorbed did the people become in the indecent representations of the stage that they lost all thought and care of the affairs of real life. Once again, that's from the book Rome, Its Rise and Fall by Myers. Pornography alone in the United States is big business, and elsewhere in the world. And most pornographic material finds its way into the hands of youths, and the internet is almost out of control in that regard. Self-indulgence today has reached new lows in morality and new highs in expenditures. Americans are literally in the midst of a pleasure explosion, and so is Britain and the rest of the Western world. Australia, New Zealand, Northwestern Europe, and Europe itself. But when an entire nation seems to have nothing but the pursuit of money, gadgetry, pleasure, escape, and thrills as its national goals, that nation is in serious trouble. Today, millions have no higher ideal or purpose than to get out and indulge themselves in a particular personal pleasure. So wrapped up and involved are millions in these short-range pleasures that few are willing to endure any discomfort or privation to solve national problems or threats. How true that is. We're becoming soft, lazy, and spoiled in our homes, communities, cities, and nations. One young man summarized the general attitude of many. Quote, I don't care much what happens as long as I get my beach time, end quote. That's typical of a huge number of people today. Another said, don't bother me while a particular television program is on. Why has such crass materialism and pleasure become the overriding concern of millions? Because the nation has lost a sense of national purpose or higher ideals other than personal selfish ones. Andrew Hacker, in his book, The End of the American Era, pointed out that thanks to our material success, a willingness to sacrifice is no longer in the American character. There are still some who are willing to sacrifice, but not enough. Most are not. And that's sad to say. Most are not willing to sacrifice to get done whatever needs done for the sake of the country. And what was once a nation has become simply an agglomeration of self-concerned individuals, a gathering of millions of egos, as he scathingly said in one of the chapters of his book. No two modern nations have changed so drastically in national character and ideals in recent years as have the British and American peoples. In his book, Decline and Fall, Britain's Crisis in the 60s, author Paul Enzig clearly explains the real cause for the decline of Britain as a world power. He wrote, Britain's most valuable asset had always been the character of her people. They are, or were until recently, as public-spirited as any nation and more so than most nations. What has been the main cause of Britain's decline? The answer is, the author regrets to say, the deterioration of some of those qualities of British character which had been responsible for the achievement of British greatness. He writes, "The British Empire was built up and maintained by the devotion of the British people to the cause of their country. That devotion seems to have declined to the vanishing point. Everybody, or at any rate the overwhelming majority, is now for himself and himself alone." When the author reads books or sees films on the Battle of Britain period, he finds it somewhat difficult to believe that the people he encounters or reads about today can possibly belong to the same race as the people who gave such a magnificent account of themselves in 1940. Author Enzig then asks, "What has happened to the spirit of Dunkirk?" "If it had not been for that spirit," he says, "Britain could not have survived as an independent nation. Had the men engaged in aircraft production slowed down for the sake of earning more overtime pay, or had they embarked on wildcat strikes at the slightest excuse, or had they been resisting measures aimed at increasing output or saving manpower, the RAF could not possibly have been provided with the additional Spitfires that enabled them to win the Battle of Britain with a narrow margin. Unfortunately," he concludes, "today the behavior that was the exception in 1940 has become the rule, while the attitude that was the rule in 1940 has now become the rare exception." How true that is, and so well put by this author. He continues, "Everybody, or almost everybody, is trying to get as much as possible out of the community and to give the community as little as possible in return. If the debasement of the British character is allowed to continue too long, the point of no return might be passed at some stage," he says. In his State of the Union message in January 1960, the late President Eisenhower said, quote, "A rich nation can for a time, without noticeable damage to itself, pursue a course of self-indulgence, making its single goal the material ease and comfort of its own citizens. But the enmities it will incur, the isolation into which it will descend, and the internal, moral, and physical softness that will be engendered will, in the long term, bring it to disaster." President Eisenhower continued, "America did not become great through softness and self-indulgence. Her miraculous progress and achievements flow from other qualities far more worthy and substantial. And those were adherence to principles and methods constant with our religious philosophy of satisfaction in hard work, the readiness to sacrifice for worthwhile causes, the courage to meet every challenge to our progress, and the intellectual honesty and capacity to recognize the true path of our best interest." End quote. Sadly, those qualities are rare today. Selfishness, pleasure-seeking, dishonesty, hatred, and lying are the watchwords. Now, of course, there are exceptions to everything we've just read. In homes and communities and cities and nations, there are people who are not like the description that we have been reading. We know that. But that population in our society is shrinking and being overtaken by the population in our culture and society that exactly fits the descriptions that we have been reading about in this booklet and that President Eisenhower summed up perfectly. Well, I want to conclude by going to the most important book that has ever been written in all of history. And it's the most popular book in terms of purchases, and yet it's the least understood and least followed of all books. And that book, of course, is God's Word, the Holy Bible. What does it have to say about the sordid state of affairs we see in our world today and in our societies around us? It has a lot to say, and it ties directly in with what we've been reading about the mighty Roman Empire and the modern Romans of today. First, let's turn to 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. Here's a prophecy God inspired Paul to write over 1,900 years ago, and look how true it is right now today. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, or money lovers, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents." Look around and see if you don't see these conditions we're reading about here. "Unthankful, unholy." Verse 3, 2 Timothy 3, "Without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, Many people will make fun of people who are trying to do the right thing. They'll call them things like goody-two-shoes and holier-than-thou. They won't appreciate the character and the effort to do the right thing that some people continue to have today. And good for them. Good for them that they're trying to do the right thing. And good for them that they're building character. The unfortunate thing is they are now in the minority in most places, schools, colleges, and communities in which they live. Despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, perfectly describes and sums up what we've been going through today. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Isn't that true? How many people alive today love God more than anything or anybody else, and especially more than pleasures? Some do, but I don't think it's the majority anymore. Let's turn to Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. I hope you are in that category of loving God more than anything or anybody else, and certainly more than pleasures. Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. Paul writes here in this verse, "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not proper, not convenient, not fitting." And that's the kind of conduct, situation ethics, and immorality that holds sway today. Now, we don't have to be that way. We can reverse course on that as individuals, and then as families, and then as communities and cities and nations, if we'll just do it. But will we do it? And if we don't do it, it's clear we're going exactly the way Rome went. The mighty Roman Empire went down the road of internal decay and then external collapse. And it was over for them. That's the path we're going down in our country and in Western civilization if a sea change is not made and made soon. And it has to do with putting God back in the picture, and it has to do with embracing principles and conduct and lifestyles that are based on character and doing the right thing instead of the wrong thing and being upstanding in our aspirations, our goals, our achievements, and our lifestyles. If you would like our free material on what we have been covering today, ask for The Lost Ten Tribes. Also ask for our free magazine, Straightforward, and we'll mail that to you as well. There's no charge or subscription price. Just send your request to Enduring Church of God, Post Office Box 1317, Chandler, Texas, 75758. You can also call our toll-free number at 1-800-581-1317. That's 1-800-581-1317. Or you can go to our website at straightforward.org. Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.
For more information, you may write to Enduring Church of God, P.O. Box 1317, Chandler, Texas, 75758, or visit our website at straightforward.org.